We have come a long way in having more frank discussions about suicide in this country, but we do not talk about death easily in the culture, so it's not like anybody really jumps up with enthusiasm to talk about people taking their own lives or thinking about taking their own lives, even if it's past tense. There's still a stigma, is the assumption of a project going on for several years now in Shasta County. Stand Against Stigma is the general organization of the project, and it includes the Brave Faces and Voices Project that lets us see and hear from people who have struggled with their own mental health and have considered or attempted suicide. We'll spend the hour learning more about process and people with Mark Dadigan, who is a community education specialist with the Shasta County Health and Human Services Department. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Cindy McDonald is with us as well. She's a marriage and family therapist, MFT, in Reading, and she's the secretary of the Sacramento chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you.
Mike Scondon is a suicide attempt survivor and one of the advocates with Stand Against Stigma, therefore one of the faces and voices. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Jeff.
And we are just now getting hooked up with Kriana Moore, who is a suicide attempt survivor as well and an advocate with Stand Against Stigma. Kriana, I think we just got you hooked up as well.
Hi. Yeah, it's me.
Good. Good to have you all here. Mark, this is a real step out of the shadows kind of thing, it would appear, and we've been going on for 4 years now. Tell us about how this all got started.
Well, you know, we were really inspired, actually, by a photographer friend of mine had done some free portraits of local people who are homeless up in the Eugene area, and they were just really humanizing portraits, and we created our own portrait gallery featuring five or six, initially, local people who also told stories about experiencing mental illness and other problems along with the portraits, and that just expanded into the speaker program. And we've had about 30 people now from all different walks of life, backgrounds, and ethnicities who've participated in sharing stories about different forms of mental illness and also about thinking about suicide or attempting suicide. And what's really been fascinating is just to see how these issues really touch every segment of the community. And it really can actually be being able to fight the stigma and unite and starting to bring these issues out of the darkness can really be almost a unifying force in a lot of ways. It really brings people together because we're all experiencing this.
So, Cindy, so you're with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Just on anybody's best guess, for everyone who comes forward as a brave face who allows their picture to be taken or goes out in public and speaks about this, I mean, how many are likely to be hidden for each one of those?
Oh, the statistics are very large. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but the amount of people that come forward about their attempts is pretty low. So that's why I always commend the Brave Faces program, just because they're the people that actually want to speak against stigma. So yeah, the percentage is very high for attempts that no one ever knows about.
All right. Cree, tell us your story. I understand you had some tough times in your teens, and tell us about what happened there.
Yeah, so anyways, I had three waves of major depression. The first started in seventh grade. I changed schools, thought I was fine. In 10th grade, though, is when I really started thinking about suicide, but I came out to my mom and I told her, and so we actually started going to a psychiatrist, but I started lying because I thought, hey, I have nothing wrong in my life. I'm not depressed. And then 12th grade was when it got really bad and I actually had an attempt. I was taken into a mental hospital. I stayed there as an inpatient for a week and then as an outpatient for 2 weeks. And from then on, it's just keep working on. I take meds. I've been using coping skills. My family's been super supportive. Everyone who has heard about Brave Faces has been supportive. And that just basically sums it up. I had a lot of the symptoms. Not eating properly, not sleeping.
But let's come back to something you said earlier about there's nothing wrong in my life. So, I mean, did you just think that it was other people who think about suicide?
Yeah, at the time I'm like, I'm not abused. I have a great family life. There's nothing wrong. People who are depressed, they have something wrong going on in their life. That's what I thought at the time.
All right. Oh, I meant to give you more of an introduction here. Cree is attending Laney College in Oakland right now, where she's studying biology. She did grow up in Shasta County and went to school there. Mike Scondon, also with the Brave Faces and Voices program, is a fine arts student at Butte Community College, specializing in glass blowing, printmaking, and watercolors. And he's a Marine Corps veteran. Mike, that's the short version here. I understand that you were exposed to substance abuse from an early age.
Yes, I was. I grew up in the Sacramento area, and it was kind of the typical inner city life thing. Single mom. I spent a lot of time with my friends while she worked and such, and I was introduced to drugs at a pretty young age. And I think that started a bad cycle for me. Now, if we jump forward to the I attempted to take my own life, that was after years of drug abuse and alcoholism, untreated post-traumatic stress,
mm-hmm.
and
how long were you in the Marines, Mike?
Oh, I just did 4 years, mm-hmm. just one hitch.
All right, and is that where the PTSD comes from?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. And so talk about the steps that you took to make you realize that that you needed to get help, and then what got you into the Stand Against Stigma program.
Well, the steps that eventually ended up getting me into getting help was that the very limited set of coping skills that I had all broke. The drugs and the alcohol that I'd been using to lull or numb the pain and self-medicate for the depression, that kind of all just stopped working. And I was in such mental and spiritual pain that I just wanted it to stop. And the suicide seemed to be the only solution that I could think of to stop the pain. I never really wanted to die. I had two small children at the time, and it's just that I couldn't think of any other way to make the pain stop. So after the suicide attempts, I finally got hooked up with the VA and started recognizing some of the core issues that that got me to that state of suicide.
Okay, and then we'll talk about getting into the Stand Against Stigma program, which is the general thrust of this hour on the Exchange. Stand Against Stigma is the umbrella for a number of projects, including the Brave Faces and Brave Voices. Project, which Mike Scondon and Cree Moore are both speakers for. We also have Mark Dadigan from Shasta County Health and Human Services with us, and Cindy McDonald from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. If you have stories to share, you have questions, you have comments for our guests, please join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Mark, where do you direct your efforts? Where do you take speakers like Cree and Mike?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is, the thinking behind the program too is that 1 in 4 people every year have a diagnosable mental health issue, but the stereotypes and myths about people who have mental illness or people who think about suicide really prevents folks from seeking out help, and because they're afraid of being judged or discriminated against. And so, bringing real people, real neighbors, real colleagues who they know or can relate to into different settings and hearing these stories really helped debunk a lot of these myths. And so, we'll go everywhere. We go to support groups. We go to Rotary clubs, professional groups. We do a lot of college classes and high school classes. We've even done presentations to some middle schoolers. And so, really, it's anyone and anywhere where people will have us. We'll go, and we've started doing open to the public forums, and we did the last one in March, and Mike and Cree participated in that, and it was particularly focused on stories from people who have survived a suicide attempt, because the statistics indicate that for every death by suicide, there's an additional two people who attempt and survive, but there is, you know, a lack of support for these folks. In a lot of cases, I think people are unsure or even a little afraid of how to support them, and we wanted to open up that dialogue.
So, Cindy McDonald, when we talk about the stigma of mental illness, I guess I'm thinking about the response that we have to physical illness. If you break your arm, everybody signs your cast. There is nothing like that in mental health, is there?
Correct, and that's the idea that we try to promote, is someone has a heart attack, you know, it's very, you know, well accepted, versus someone has depression, everyone wants to stay away from that. So, yeah, that's exactly what part of the Stand Against the Stigma is about.
Well, give us an idea of, I might have this question backwards. I was going to ask what the least understood thing about suicide is. Maybe I guess the question should be, what's the biggest myth about suicide?
Oh, there's so many. I think one of the biggest ones that I see with my personal clientele is kind of what Mike said, is that their intent is not to die, it's to get rid of the pain. And then there's always the, you have the signs, but you might not see the signs. But no, the biggest one is that they just want to get rid of their pain. And I think if family and support people can understand that, that's what is some of the breakthrough with people not wanting to reach out, is that they have that misunderstanding.
Cree, I want to come to you. Your mom works in public health. Talk about the process of getting you into the Stand Against Stigma program.
Well, my mom knew Mark, and she came up to me and she's like, hey, they're doing this really cool thing. Would you like to talk about what happened with you? And that's how it started. And I went in and I talked to Mark. We discussed what I'd say. We set up the pictures. We set up the video. It was pretty much, my mom came up, she's like, do you want to try this? And I said, sure.
It's one thing to speak to a group of people, though, but like you and your mom, Shalisa Moore, have your pictures all over this website. I mean, there's a whole gallery, which is both you and Mike and all the other people involved as well. Was there any trepidation about that, about having your face out there for the whole world to see?
Yeah, I was a little nervous, but family definitely helped when they found out. They're like, this is so brave of you. I'm so proud of you. And my mom's friends, some of them would go up to her and say, thank you for telling about this. Such an important topic to talk about. Yeah, so it was very nice hearing the feedback from other people before it totally went up.
And Mike Scondon, talk about your process of getting into the Stand Against Stigma program.
I met Mark at a function, and we struck up a conversation about mental illness, and he asked me if I'd like to be involved with the Brave Faces. And it was kind of as simple as that. And then a little bit of the same process that Cree just described went in and you know, recorded an interview and took some pictures, and next thing you know, I was on the webpage.
Mark, it sounds like you're a bit of an opportunist here in the sense that you always get your ears open for stories that might help other people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, when I met Mike and he mentioned his history with the Marine Corps, of course, I kind of pounced on him, you could say, because I'm always looking out for stories that kind of fit gaps or can connect to a new group of people we haven't connected with yet. But I think the important thing to mention about our process is, you know, it's very much driven by the participants and what they feel is important and what they want to share. So I'm kind of just the curator and the collector and editor, and they're really in control of their story. And a lot of our presenters say, you know, the storytelling process and going and doing speeches really actually helps them and helps the healing process, not only because they're getting great feedback from people who connect with their story or even inspired by their story to seek help for the first time, but also it just helps them to organize their story in a storytelling presentation. It kind of helps them even make better sense of what they've gone through and really helps them process it, I would say.
In the 4 years since you first began putting the faces and voices out there, has it snowballed a bit? Has this encouraged other people to come forward?
Oh, yeah. I think the most difficult part was really getting that initial first brave crew together, the first five or six people who jumped forward and really didn't have any kind of reference point of what it was going to look like and what it was going to be like. And you know, we actually have a bit of a waiting list of different people who want to participate, and I kind of prioritize it by, like I said, people who fill a gap in our program. But I think once people see the presentations and once they see the impact they have, you know, when people who are ready to share their story publicly, they really want to be a part of it. And we also have a training program called Becoming Brave that kind of walks people through the process for themselves to figure out if they are ready to start disclosing to people that publicly.
We're talking about the Stand Against Stigma program in Shasta County. Mark Dadigan is with Shasta County Health and Human Services. We also have with us Cindy McDonald from the Sacramento chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She is herself a marriage and family therapist. And we have two of the brave faces and voices from the Stand Against Stigma program. We have Cree Moore and Mike Scondon with us as well. This is a discussion you are welcome to join. We'll be taking the balance of the hour with this. Garrison Keillor will be at the end of the hour. He will be here. But you can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jackie in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. I had a major depressive break myself about 8 years ago that took about a year to culminate in a very serious suicide attempt. I was accidentally found. The interesting thing was, I'm a physician assistant in town, and I did not recognize my symptoms. It was extremely painful. I wanted to say physically painful. I was married to a physician who was too embarrassed to get help for me. When I was found, I insisted I get some help and be taken to a safe place. I knew that was the thing to do. We also had a son who was attempting suicide lightly, if you want to call it that. It started talking suicide at age 12. During my recovery year, my husband didn't tell any of my friends where I was, so there was a distinct stigma. He didn't want anyone to know that I had attempted. Then my son made a serious attempt in Lane County, Oregon, at Lane in Oregon, and my husband refused to sign him in because he didn't want that stigma, didn't want his son angry at him. So his son was released a week later and actually did take his life. So I have spent the years since that time, my story is very public. Nobody in my family or my town is unaware of this story. I share it quite openly. I think it's very important that people realize that high-functioning people have mental breakdowns, have serious mental illness, and it's important to take them seriously. Let other people know it happens and that something can be done to prevent it.
All right. So you mentioned that your husband's son was talking lightly from about age 12 about that. What do you mean? He didn't make it sound very serious himself, or how was that presented?
Well, it was very scary. I took it seriously. My husband didn't. So I took him to therapist. Therapist didn't take him seriously. And I took him to, I would think, 7 different doctors. None prescribed antidepressants, and they all said it was sort of normal. I knew it wasn't normal. He started cutting. And then when he went away to college, he would talk to me about his ideations of suicide. But then when I attempted seriously and was hospitalized, I was sort of removed from his life. He didn't want to talk to me anymore, so he started talking to his dad, who didn't take him seriously at all. And he slit his wrists and called his dad and wanted his dad to listen to him as he died. His dad called the police, had the doors broken down. He was taken to the emergency room. He was kept in ICU for 2 weeks, but the authorities, because my son wasn't yet an adult, asked my husband to sign him in into the psychiatric unit, and my husband didn't take it seriously. He refused.
All right.
My son was released and then overdosed and used carbon monoxide in a closed garage. It was a very, you know, he was serious.
Yeah, he was very determined about that. So very clear. Jackie, thank you for sharing the story. I know it's been painful to do so, and I very much appreciate you doing that. Cindy McDonald, for people who are presented with a situation like what Jackie found in her life, what are the steps? What should people be doing?
I think the biggest thing is, as she said, she had some failed attempts with physicians and therapists, and I always tell people, just be assertive. You know, never, you know, keep fighting to find the right therapist, to find the right doctor, because there are good trained clinicians and physicians out there. Just sometimes it does take work. So I think you have to just make the right steps and always fight for what you feel is right to get help, because talking about it can save a life and talking about it can get you what you need. Sometimes you just have to fight for it because we are continuing to fight a stigma.
Does the stigma lead to people poo-pooing the idea that people are having suicidal ideation? Do we tend to downplay those things because it's kind of icky for us to think about that if we're not thinking about suicide, to see somebody else thinking about it?
I believe so. I think that a lot of people don't express their ideation or passive tense because they're afraid of the reaction. And I think that's what helps, what deters a lot of people from getting help, and then also the support. A lot of family members don't want to ask people, are you thinking about suicide or are you thinking about dying? Because either they're afraid of the answer or they're just afraid of the stigma or what that's going to unleash out of Pandora's box.
I've seen some other people talk about that part of it, though, that you do need to ask the question, that you do need to be ask the question and listen for the answer. You know, are you having suicidal thoughts? It needs to be asked. Is that safe? Is that fair to say?
Yes, one of the stigmas is people have been afraid for a long time that if they ask, that's going to put the idea in the head. That's never going to put the idea in the head. Usually the idea is already in their head. But if you don't ask, or if you think someone else is going to ask, then you might lose that opportunity, because you have to think a lot of people with ideation and in the suicidal mind, is they feel very alone and very hopeless. So by not asking, that just validates their feelings that people don't care. So yes, always asking is not going to put the idea, it's just going to help somebody. So you always have to ask the question, and you can be as direct as you want.
Okay, so there's really no sugarcoating it. You just need to get in there and say, look, are you thinking about suicide? It needs to be that plain.
Yes.
All right, we'll come back and talk more about this. We're not finished with this topic, so if you would like to join the conversation, you still have a chance here. We'll be spending about another 15 minutes on the other side of this break talking with Cindy McDonald, Mark Dadigan, Cree Moore, and Mike Scondon about Stand Against Stigma in Shasta County and about suicide prevention more generally. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with our guests and your phone calls and emails in a minute five. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're continuing a discussion about mental health, mental illness, suicide, and suicide prevention with a focus on the Stand Against Stigma program run through Shasta County Health and Human Services. It includes a Brave Faces and Voices program for which we have two people who have attempted suicide in the past and now speak about their experiences. Those are Mike Scondon and Cree Moore on the line with us. And we also have Cindy McDonald, who is with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She's the secretary of the Sacramento chapter and a marriage and family therapist in Redding. And Mark Dadigan joins us as well. He's a community education specialist with Shasta County Health and Human Services. You can join this discussion on the Exchange. It is obviously something that people don't talk about easily in America, which is one of the issues we're taking up in Stand Against Stigma. You can talk about suicide here in the Exchange with us. If you have a story to share, a question to ask, or a comment to make, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Another call here from Connie and Eugene. Thank you for waiting, and welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I congratulate you people for being willing to speak up on this subject. One of the things that concerns me now, as opposed to, say, 20 or 30 years ago, is that we had paper records, locked records, a sense of privacy. And in the Internet age, I wonder if you could speak to the fact that if anything gets out there that says you are suicidal or, you know, Susie has done this or that, that's out there forever in the social media or other places, and also the possibility of people seeing medical records as being hackable or easily accessible now with the electronic records, and so that a person would be even more restrained from either getting help or even mentioning anything to do with suicide because of the lifelong stigma that a possible floating of this record would be in the social media.
Okay, interesting question. Thanks for that, Connie. Appreciate that. Let me send that to you, Cindy McDonald.
And I think that is an accurate concern. So I think sometimes it's, you know, you can always do, it's your story. So is what I encourage people to do, you know, own your own story. Yes, you might get some kickback and you might get some stigma about it, but I think you can, you know, recoup from it and help from any other negative backlash is coming up from just owning your story and speaking about it and helping people understand about it on a social media aspect. And then when it comes to medical records, there's so many HIPAA and confidentiality clauses and protection is I feel you really are protected on the medical records aspect.
Okay, so that isn't less of a concern. Let me flip that around to Mark Dadd again. I want to ask how social media might have helped this process of putting Stand Against Stigma and the Brave Faces and Voices program out there.
Yeah, well, I do first want to, you know, honor what the caller said. I you know, discrimination is very real when it comes to these issues, and, you know, some of our speakers have had some situations where they kind of have wondered if, you know, maybe they didn't get this job or some other opportunity because they are public. So, you know, that's a reality that, you know, our speakers all have to face. But I think like Cindy said, social media is a powerful vehicle for change on these issues. And like she said, owning your story and taking control of it if it does get out is, if you're ready to do that, I think that can be a powerful antidote to these issues. And, this is our long-term goal is, you know, for people, if people do know this publicly about someone who's suffering from depression or a mental illness of some kind, is to not have that be a source of stigma or discrimination. You know, we want it to be just like someone finding out you have diabetes or something like that, some other manageable long-term health issue. So our long-term goal is that, you know, people will no longer have to fear that, and that's what we're working towards.
When we talk about owning your story, that's exactly what Mike Scondon and Cree Moore have done. Mike, give us a sense of some of the first steps after you, in a sense, came out and let the world know about your story.
A lot of what Mark said right there, it was just owning my story. And by taking control of it, I was able to dispel any misinformation or you know, misunderstood beliefs that people may have had about the situation I put myself in, or you know, I just removed all the guesswork. I opened up, let anybody ask me whatever question they wanted to ask, and gave them as an honest answer as I could. And what that did is it helped people understand that you know, this isn't like something that can only happen to certain people. This can happen to anybody. You know, I was pretty successful in my career when this all came about, and it can happen to anybody.
Are there friends who I want to ask about friends and relationships? Whether the people who were with you before you attempted suicide are still with you now? I mean, have you lost anybody out of this who just felt weird about being around you or anything like that?
A few, yes. But I guess, you know, it, as I look at it now is, you know, maybe there were some things that they couldn't handle.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they tried to take some ownership in what I did. So it's hard for them to be around. But for the most part, I'd have to say probably 95% of the people that knew me are very supportive in what I'm doing now and have actually told me that they've seen a lot of growth in my mental health recovery from doing this. The more I talk about it, the more my story becomes, and the more I can see where I need to move toward to heal myself from these issues.
Cree Moore, let's get a sense of what it's like the first time you're out there speaking to a group. Tell me what that was like, and then tell me even now what happens afterward. I presume people come up to you and have some questions and stories to relate when it's all over.
Well, the first time speaking, I was very nervous. I spoke with my mom. It was really weird because that was my first time speaking out to a group of people. And in some ways that makes it easier because they were a bunch of strangers. I didn't know them I knew them for only the length of that class. And now I still get super nervous talking to people. I'm better at it. But I still get nervous. But I haven't really had anyone talk to me afterwards. But when they do, they mostly say, that was very brave. Thank you for speaking. Thanks for helping me understand.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the lessons learned along the way for you and Mike. What would you say was the thing that that finally hit you upside the head one day, if there was such a moment, and you said, "Oh, that's what this is all about."
That was actually in the hospital right after my attempt, where I'm like, "Okay, this is serious. I need to do something about it," and so I did. Well, in the hospital, I talked to the therapist, I talked to the psychiatrist, I joined in the group therapy sessions. Basically, I made sure I talked. If I was feeling a certain way, I told someone about it. And I still do that this day. Like, I'll text my mom. Mm-hmm. Hey, Mom, I'm not feeling great. Or I'll text my friends. So talking was a big thing for me. I've learned how to deal with my anxiety by using coping skills. But the main thing for me was just talking to people about it.
Mike Scondon, what is it for you? Who is the person that that you are best helped by in this process?
Oh, wow. I think everybody. What I realized is right before my attempt, I was disconnecting. Mm-hmm. I was cutting my ties with everybody that I know and just in and isolating. And after this, you know, I realized that that's what I do. So now I make myself accountable to other people. You know, I text people good morning. I call people. I stay in touch with people. I keep strong connections. So I don't get that that feeling of loneliness. Mm-hmm. You know, being all by myself, because that was one of the key factors in my suicide attempt. So I just try to stay connected with the people around me.
Okay. Isolation, yeah, we know it can cause some real problems for people. Mark, I want to come to you, Mark Dadigan, because there's a lot of focus on the website for Stand Against Stigma about taking medications. It seems like in our pill-for-everything culture, and it's not just medicinal but recreational as well, this would not be such a big issue, but it sounds like taking medications for mental problems is still a very big issue.
Oh, well, I think there is a lot of stigma associated with taking a psychiatric medication that you don't have to deal with if you're, like, going back to that same metaphor, taking insulin for diabetes or something. You know, people can face a lot of judgment and even discrimination for that. And also, there's also this other stigma out there about, you know, people who have mental health problems and don't take their prescribed meds. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about why that happens. And so we do have some blogs and stories on the website that directly address that and how complex taking psych meds are and how it can be a very difficult process to figure out what works for you, and there can be very troubling side effects. And you know, it's for some people, you know, the medications are a key part of recovery and getting stable, but, you know, it doesn't come without some costs. But I think it's also important to acknowledge, going back to the caller, Jackie, and what Mike was saying is, you know, there's a lot of research that shows why that while therapy and meds and other treatments are important, this connection and this sense of community and having a purpose and a place in the community is just as important, if not more important. And I think that's why we wanted to start this conversation about people who survive suicide attempts, because far too often they're kind of left to their own devices, and that should actually be a time when we as a community and their friends and loved ones should be rallying around them. And I think some of that just comes from a lack of knowledge and not knowing what to do or being afraid of what to do. And so that's what we're trying to get the word out, is how you can be supportive.
We're talking about mental health and suicide here on the Jefferson Exchange with the folks from Shasta County Stand Against Stigma program. That was Mark Dadigan. We also have Cindy McDonald, Cree Moore, and Mike Scondon with us. How have you managed to put this whole program together, Mark Dadigan? I mean, was there additional staffing, additional funding needed to create Stand Against Stigma?
Well, in California, we have the Mental Health Services Act, which is a 1% tax on millionaires, and some of that funding goes to what's considered mental health prevention. And so then part of that is stigma reduction. So that's where funding for our program comes, and the idea is that by reducing stigma, we're going to be reducing barriers to people seeking help. And so people will start seeking help, hopefully, when they first start seeing initial symptoms, and they won't be waiting until they're in a full-blown crisis.
Has it had the desire? I mean, you mentioned that more people have come into the program as faces and voices. Have you had more people seek help in the time since this program's been out there for 4 years or so?
You know, it's hard to know. We don't have hard data on that necessarily. I do feel like there has been a change in the community dialogue and the community understanding. We do a lot of measurements of our presentations, and we actually have these scientific surveys that show that people, after they see speakers like Mike and Cree, that their attitudes about mental illness and seeking help improve. And I do think, you know, slowly but surely we're seeing a change in the way people conceive of these issues and the way we have public discourse about these issues.
Cindy McDonald, what would you say are the largest unmet needs, though? What are the things that you most need to be able to really make more of a difference in suicide prevention?
I think decreasing the stigma, I think prevention awareness, education at a younger age. We've had a really challenging time breaking into schools to provide some suicide prevention education and resources, as well as just with anything with the medical model and with insurance, that it always creates a barrier with people, whether they're usually insurance will cover therapeutic treatment. However, with deductibles and co-pays, a lot of people can't afford it. So I feel like the financial and insurance barrier is one for people actually being able to get treatment.
Is the Affordable Care Act helping a bit? Because mental health coverage is supposed to be included with medical insurance now.
I believe it is slowly. I know in our community there's a lot more therapists that will accept Affordable Care Act insurance. So I think it's getting there. It has positive hope to more and more therapists will be accepting that insurance so more and more people can get some services.
You know, we tend to focus on teens, but are there other age groups of concern, Cindy?
Sadly, I think as young as junior high and sometimes younger. And that's kind of where we're missing a population with prevention services just because nothing's been developed yet. It's in the works. But I think as much as people are scared to believe this, there's children as young as 10 and 11 sometimes having some suicidal thoughts. So I think there's no early age that's early enough for some prevention education.
If somebody has any questions anywhere in the country, there is a national helpline, isn't there, for some questions to be answered?
Yeah, the National Suicide Prevention Helpline is very helpful. It is 1-800-273-TALK. And there is also a national crisis line that is really helpful, and it's 24/7. It is, you can text anything, help, start, hello, to 741-741.
Okay. 800-273-TALK is the phone number, which I think that still comes to 8255, T-A-L, yeah, 8255. Mike Scondon, what's the chief message you give when you speak to groups? What's the thing you want them to walk away knowing that they didn't know when they came into the room?
That they're not alone. If they're thinking about suicide, that they're not alone. That there's help out there, and they can recover from this. And then I guess the other important message would be for the family members is don't be silent. You know, don't sit around and wait for something to happen. Be proactive. You know, pester that person, because as soon as they make that disconnection from their family, that's when they're most likely to make the attempt.
Yeah.
Don't let that stuff get in the way. You know, pester them, ask them, keep them talking.
Okay, Creemore, same question. What do you want to leave groups with? What's the one thing you want them to know that they didn't know coming into the room?
The main thing I try to give to people is that there doesn't need to be a reason for them to be depressed. Anyone can be depressed. It doesn't matter if you're from a higher income, lower income, your family life. Anyone can be depressed, so you should definitely take a look out for that.
All right. So it's a much more complicated situation than turn that frown upside down by a long shot. And you guys have certainly gone a long way to let people know about that. Cree Moore is a suicide attempt survivor and an advocate with Stand Against Stigma. Mike Scondon, also a suicide attempt survivor and advocate with Stand Against Stigma in Shasta County, which is run out of the Health and Human Services Department, where Mark Dadigan is a community education specialist. Cindy McDonald also joined us. She's a marriage and family therapist in Reading and the secretary of the Sacramento chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jeff.
All right. You'll be well.